Yeah, it's the Microsoft way. They took they're taking a play out of the Microsoft playbook, right? If it doesn't work, then you stop the car, you shut the car off, you get out of the car, you get back in the car, you start the car, and then the car works.
I'm going to jump off again really quick and try and get this sorted out. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, no worries. Restart your phone, bro. That probably help. So good morning and welcome. I believe this is episode number 8 of the Bitcoin Veterans Spaces. Even though this is hosted by veterans, this is open and everybody's welcome. Bitcoiners are welcome. People who are curious about Bitcoin are welcome. You don't have to be a veteran to be hanging out in here or come talk on the panel. Those are not requirements. We're just doing this really for all the new people out there, primarily, who are curious about Bitcoin, want to know what it is, want to know whether it's safe, want to know whether it's better than shitcoins. Spoiler, it's better than shitcoins. You shouldn't shitcoin. That's really bad for you and non-productive in general. We can talk about that later, but all the mistakes people make when they're learning about Bitcoin, how do you do self-custody? That's a big one. You know, self-custody terrifies the shit out of a lot of people. And those of us who've been around Bitcoin for a little while, sometimes we forget that. But I deal with it on the regular because I talk to new people pretty regularly as a function of my occupation. And, you know, you would be shocked by how many people, mostly, especially, I should say, boomers, but not always. There's plenty of people who just aren't that great with technology. It's more common than you might imagine. And there are also people who, sometimes they're forgetful. You know, I can think of one guy that I was trying to teach self-custody one time, and he was like, this guy is not a smart, is not a dumb guy. All right, he's a very smart dude, business owner, wealthy guy, and has to be smart in order to run the business, the size of business that he had. But he was like, you know, I forget my car keys and lose them constantly. He's like, there's no way I'm going to do self-custody, man. This is not going to happen. So you got to, you know, as a Bitcoiner, I agree personally, self-custody is the best way to do things. In fact, I kind of am leaning in the direction of multi-sig nowadays, for reasons, and we can jump into that if you want. But I think it's going to become way, way more common where Bitcoiners, as the value of our stack starts to grow, as Bitcoin starts to hit 100K per Bitcoin, 250K per Bitcoin, 500K per Bitcoin, 1 million per Bitcoin, 5 million per Bitcoin, 10 million per Bitcoin. You know, at some point, a person might not be super, and we can hear you, Coleman. I think you're still backwards. A person may, just remember it's backwards, I guess. A person may at some point come to look at their physical security setup and think to themselves, man, I'm not super comfortable with this $10 million worth of Bitcoin sitting on a treasure. What the hell am I doing right now? So yeah, there's things to consider, right? Anyway, our mission, as I mentioned, is to talk to the new people about Bitcoin. We're going to do that. If you're a veteran and you're interested in getting involved in Bitcoin Veterans, throw a follow to the Bitcoin Veterans handle. We have tons of stuff for you guys. Bitcoin Veterans has turned into a really huge, unstoppable thing. I'd never imagined it would turn into what it is when it was started. It's got over 600 guys and growing every single day. There's Citadel Network stuff, radio stuff, firearm stuff, PTSD stuff, Intel CyberSec, Operation Bitcoin, social media stuff, self-custody, privacy, wallet management stuff. We have a pilot channel, Bushcraft and Survival. Like if you're just into that kind of stuff, you don't have to be a veteran, by the way, to join a lot of these. You know, we reserve what we call our regional chats specifically for veterans. But, you know, if you're not a veteran and you're interested in any of the stuff we're talking about, hit us up. The Bushcraft and Survival. I mean, last night, Coleman Payne was on the video podcast for Bitcoin Veterans as the featured guest. And they did this really deep dive on hunting, which was really freaking cool. I mean, because I'm not a big hunting guy myself. I have hunted. I do enjoy it. But like these guys are, you know, they're a little bit of maniacs. I mean, you just look at Coleman's freaking profile picture, get yourself an idea there. Anyway, I will stop with all of, I will stop there and basically just say, maybe check out the DIB in the nest. That's a good thing to look at. It's prepared once a day by our very own Randy Kelly, his former SEAL sniper. Gives you a good kind of very high level view of geopolitics and how it intersects with Bitcoin. And with that, Coleman, you got some for us to talk about today.
Yeah, I got a bunch of stuff to talk about. Sorry about the technical issues. I don't know what's going on. Just want to shout out a couple people I saw come up. Lisa, Ho, Shane, Wade. I'm not sure if you guys were mentioned yet. Welcome. I think first we should probably talk about, not sure if you mentioned it at all, but that Binance. Binance account froze several Palestinian accounts, froze their wallets. And underneath Israel's request. And so I think I'd love to hear your take on it. Anybody in the audience?
Just another reminder to get your coins off exchanges. And if that doesn't prove why right there, I don't know what else would.
Yeah, that quite literally is the only way they can do it, right? So for people who are new and they need context here. I had one guy the other day, he goes to me, he goes, the United States is one of the largest holders of Bitcoin. Therefore, it proves that Bitcoin can be confiscated. So he's, again, this is a person with a very TradFi, he's literally a TradFi financial advisor, right? And he's deep, he has deep confirmation bias, and he has deep probably sunk cost bias on top of his confirmation bias. And he basically said, you know, that's the proof. That's all the proof you need, that Bitcoin is confiscatable. What he's missing there is that if Bitcoin is sitting on an exchange, call it Coinbase, call it Swan, call it any exchange, and a government comes to the exchange and says, hey, this user is a criminal, freeze their account, give us their Bitcoin. Well, guess what? If that, you know, if that exchange is in a jurisdiction where the government might arrest the people who work in the company and throw them in prison, guess what? What do you think they're going to do? They're going to turn over the Bitcoin, which is the reason why Bitcoiners generally say, learn self-custody, take custody of your own Bitcoin. Now, multi-sig is another way you can do that, right? And so these are the reasons why, self-custody, not on exchange. Go ahead, AC.
I don't hear AC, but I'll jump in here. Yeah, I mean, the thing is with Bitcoin, at least for the newcomers, is that there is no special access. It doesn't matter if you're a company or who you are or your nation state. Like, everyone has to interact with Bitcoin in the exact same way, or at least there's an egalitarian, neutral way for us to all interact. So really, all there is self-custody. All there is are the keys to the Bitcoin and where the Bitcoin is located on the time chain, on the blockchain. So when we say don't leave it on an exchange, it's not that your Bitcoin is being left on an exchange, it's that they have the keys. They have the same keys that you should have. So either you have the keys to the location of your Bitcoin and the ownership and control of it, or someone else has the keys. And so when people think of it that way, it's less confusing. You know, our fiat minds are just so used to having a custodian and having to trust a third party, and especially when it comes to finance and investing. But the beauty of what Satoshi and the cryptographers that came before him have created for us is just this ability for self-sovereignty and for ownership, and for the first time ever to really, truly own and possess your wealth, that no one can take it from you. And so if you interact with Bitcoin and you don't take advantage of that main benefit, you kind of are losing, you're losing the plot. Yeah, so that's 100%. Why it's super important. Yeah.
Let me add one more thing here. As we start, you know, this is our eighth spaces, and I think it's probably good to set some groundwork and just let all the speakers know, like, you guys already know this, but I'm going to remind you, because I think we all forget from time to time because we've been around Bitcoin for a minute. You know, when you're discussing these things, think to yourself, how would I explain this to a new person? and go into the detail of how you would explain it to a new person, because a lot of times new people have never heard this stuff before. We've all heard it a thousand times at this point, right? And, you know, sometimes people join these kind of spaces and they're like, Jesus Christ, all you guys do is talk about the same shit over and over and over again. Yes, yes, Jackwagon, it's because that's not for you. You've been around a long time. You know some of this stuff already. It's for the new folks. Stop being so selfish and self-centered. Think about the new people, guys. And AC, open mic.
AC, we can't operate like this. Let's get it together.
Booted him. Okay, on we go.
You know, I was thinking about how a lot of the normies, they're so used to hand-holding and having custodians and relying on these services that, you know, Bitcoin doesn't operate in. And you have to have this, you know, courage to be able to be 100% responsible for something. And I think that people are just, a lot of them aren't ready for that. There's growing up in a society where there's a phone number they can call or someone they can, you know, reach out to if they have an issue. And Bitcoin doesn't operate like that. You have to be an independent thinker and you have to be willing to take 100% responsibility for something to be, you know, self-custody. And a lot of people just aren't ready for that. And they got to find the courage to get over that hump.
Yeah, I think that was probably the biggest piece that was holding me back. So I think it was, 22? So like January, February, 2022, I had my entire stack at Celsius. And I had, it's funny, right? It's hilarious. But I had good Bitcoin friends, and they basically bullied me into taking self-custody. So I finally did. You know, I picked one that looked, you know, easy to use. I watched the BTC Sessions video. I set it up, and I withdrew it. And maybe 3 weeks later, Celsius went bankrupt. And so because I had these good Bitcoin friends that bullied me into taking self-custody, I avoided losing basically everything. So I mean, so it's like, okay, the government can seize it, yada, yada, freaking self-sovereignty, all those things. But the company can go bankrupt too. Like, this stuff's not FDIC insured. And like, okay, they waited until Bitcoin pumped a little bit. And so they can tell you that you got paid back 110% on your deposit. But if you lost, you know, five Bitcoin at what, 20K, and then they pay you back 100K, you know, a year later when Bitcoin's 60K, like, did you really get paid back? No, you can't, because Bitcoin's uninsurable. You can't insure absolute scarcity in a fiat system. So,
Mickey, who bullied you? Tell us. We'll take care of it. Just let us know. Who was it?
No, they're good. They're good. So we have a little... Before the Bitcoin veterans, we have a little group chat. So I think it was Alex Brammer and some other guys that actually bullied me into it, but it was good.
A little bit of bullying is good sometimes, you know, when done in brotherly love. We call it hard love in the military. People who don't deal with being confronted directly, sometimes they don't deal with that really well. They look at it really as bullying, and they confuse the bullying that you see like in high school with real bullies, with kind of the fraternal roughhousing that you see in the military, and they think it's the same thing. It's not the same thing. It's in the military when it happens, the vast, vast, vast majority of the time, it's really to tune a guy up and make him a better dude. Sorry, Terrence, I interrupted you. What's up?
Oh, no, I was just going to say it. The self-custody shows what you can do with it, because ever since Mickey has had this artisanally groomed beard and these tight tailored threads, I mean, he's looking really sharp, and he would not be looking like that if he's stuck with Celsius. I mean, everyone lost from Celsius.
Facts. It's against the laws of physics. You can't look that dapper and be fucking around with Celsius at the same time.
It's beef tallow and methylene blue. If you know, you know.
Good morning to Terrence, Gabe, Lord, AC, Hunter, Jason. What's up, guys?
Good morning.
Hey, uppercase Terrence, are you loading up on the Trump trading cards, the new NFTs that have dropped? Sounds like something you would like.
Or at the bank.
Yeah, I'm always looking for a good rug pull as a former Wall Street guy from the trading floor. It's awesome to have at least 50% of the presidential candidates that are likely to win shitcoin and scam on retail. I love it. I wanted to get back to you. I had a thought on this Telegram CEO thing. So far, it seems like pretty much everyone who's kind of gone to court and gone to prison, they've eventually given up their Bitcoin. If the Telegram CEO can resist that or will resist giving up what we think is all his Bitcoin, then that would be a good marketing thing or good argument for skeptics who say, well, you know, maybe they can't confiscate it in that you hold it, but they know your public address or they suspect and they can make you cough it up. So if he can resist that, if he goes to, you know, as he's arrested and detained, if he goes to prison, then that could be a good thing for Bitcoiners to get more people on board.
Did you see that the UAE canceled their order of 80 fighter jets from France? That's pretty significant. Yeah. I guess the Telegram CEO is sort of a friend of royalty and obviously a UAE citizen, but I mean, Alex, you are veterans, you guys tell me, but aren't these fighter jets like 100 million a pop or so, depending on the model?
Yeah, some of them are more than that. I mean, the fifth generation fighters are way more than that. And even the high-end fourth generation fighters are extremely, extremely expensive. So yeah, that's a big deal that they blew up. And it the timing of it is not an accident, I don't think. I think it's fairly obvious that the timing is related. AC, open mic.
Yeah, the contract was worth 17 billion euros. So I don't know what that equates to U.S. dollars, but it's a little bit more.
Euros used to be 1.5-ish or 1.3-ish in that range. So that's a lot for sure.
Anybody else have any takes on that? Has anyone heard about possibly the U.S. back-channeling approval for Pavel's arrest so that they could moderate Telegram's channels and use the back end for the military and intel purpose?
Yeah, there's a guy that did a pod about this. I think it's in my opinion, it's speculation currently because I haven't watched the pod. I haven't done the due diligence on the pod yet. So, but yeah, there is a dude out there claiming that at the moment.
It would make sense. It seems like a really bold move for France to make by arresting him.
Yeah, I definitely feel like there's players in the background of that. It's pretty par for the course.
So I think one benefit though is that people that do stuff like this are so ideologically blinded, they can't think through second and third order consequences. And so from what I understand, he is a citizen of multiple countries to include, I think it was the UAE. And I saw yesterday that he's friends with like, you know, the crown prince's son or something like that. So UAE canceled a $10 billion like jet order from France in response to that. And so, you know, it's like, what are the second and third order consequences? Okay, so UAE cancels $10 billion jet order, which may or may not be connected. But on top of that, do you think tech billionaires are going to come party in Paris now? Like, do you know what I mean?
Oh, so, yeah, I didn't think of that.
Yeah. And so you got, what is it? It's the sovereign individual thesis playing out. And so you get all these rich people. And so now you're going to get billionaires and like tech moguls, all these people who are like, quote unquote, high risk now for political, I mean, obviously pretty transparent political persecution, right? And so they're going to be looking into Bitcoin self-sovereignty, and then you're going to get, you know, this network of like ultra rich digital nomads, like seriously looking into Bitcoin as a hedge for their sovereignty, because where can you bank now? where can you live? You don't know. Yeah. Are you gonna stop for gas in France and just get arrested because I don't know, some like leftist psychopath wants you to backdoor your app so they can spy on their population? And so that's one thing that I truly enjoy about this, is that it's sort of taking the mask off and you're seeing people's true intentions, but they're so blinded they can't think through the consequences of it.
You know, if the guy that Coleman brought up is correct, and this was basically approved by the U.S. government, you understand that all these governments, through information sharing agreements, they provide each other data on their citizens, right? Like, you could have France doing the spying through the back door into Telegram, but they'll just provide all the information on U.S. citizens to the United States. That's the way that works.
I may or may not be familiar with this.
It's some wild stuff, man. Shout outs to Nathan Fast in the audience, Bob Kuntz, Tom Tabor, Wade.
Enough. At some point, given we have 50 states plus DC and the federal government, all of these folks can charge you with stuff and DAs, right, in your city, district attorneys. So there's a lot of opportunity to get charged. I think Alex and others have talked about this book called Three Felonies a Day, where you go about your daily life and unwittingly, Not with no intent, do you commit three felonies just going through life, because we have a ridiculous number of laws. I think part of it is political, but part of it is they have to have at least a rational basis, if not pretty good evidence, whether they're trumped up or not. But they have the evidence and the law on their side to at least bring this case, so they're not laughed out of court and derided and potentially even disbarred for malpractice and wasting everybody's time. So, yeah, I think it is what it is. He's always been on the line. He's obviously deeply unpopular with the establishment and the deep state, if there is one. No comment on that. But, yeah, this is the timing is not great, because ideally you would have an election where... So, number one... I think all the crimes, I don't know about this one, but all or most of the crimes that he's been charged with happened years ago, and they should have been brought up, right, the Jan 6 stuff, within a year or so after that incident happened, instead of waiting for, and now it's interfering with the election. So I don't really like that, but it is what it is. And yeah, he's just going to, if I were him, I would actually hire some better lawyers this time. He seems to hire lawyers that aren't great at this.
By he, you mean Trump hires bad lawyers?
Yes, yes, because they keep losing, and badly. You can say all you want about the DA being corrupt and the judge being corrupt, but it was a jury of his peers, or a jury of 12, you know, regular folks from New York, very progressive, right, state where Trump's pretty unpopular, but he is from there, and he did a lot, like the Trump hotels and some of the best restaurants in the city, they're often in Trump hotels and stuff. So he did build a lot of stuff, and he was popular for a while, like I think before he became president or started attacking Obama for being, you know, born in Kenya or whatever.
I'm curious, for those of you who don't know, by the way, Terrence has got a background in law, and he did, I'm not going to steal his thunder or whatever, but he did some pretty cool stuff on Wall Street. I was curious about this concept of jury of peers. Terrence, what is the definition of peers in this sense?
Yeah, so the idea is you cannot be convicted of most crimes without a jury of your peers. So you go to, for criminal stuff, which he was convicted of, you have a jury of regular folks who are just like you. It was meant to protect the regular person. It's a little harder when you're an unpopular billionaire, an unpopular president.
So peers basically means just regular people. That's the idea behind peers, just regular people.
Yeah, and I would add that for a while, at one point in New York, there are so many exceptions that very few people are showing up for jury duty. So at one point, they're like, there are no more exceptions. So you started having CEOs and senators showing up for jury duty because they stopped making exceptions, and then they rolled it back a little. That was probably the right decision. But yeah,
a lot of people got out of jury duty. I think some still do, but not as bad in New York as it used to be.
Anybody else have any thoughts on the Trump charges?
I think it's a fascinating concept, really. And it's an interesting point that you bring up, Alex, that, I mean, who the hell is a peer with somebody like Donald Trump? How do you select that jury?
Yeah, I was going to say, you need to get 12 billionaires who are land developers in New York.
Yeah, 12 former presidents of the
there,
United
States. There probably are more than 12, yes.
Yeah, to be fair, there probably are, but that's why I was curious about the definition.
Yeah, it's bizarre, but I mean...
Yeah, so I feel like maybe, this is all kind of Monday morning quarterbacking, but if Trump's, because he was found guilty on 34 out of 34 felony charges by the jury, I feel like maybe if he had lawyers had done a better job, or maybe his lawyers were good, but they would have done something different, because the 12 jurors they picked obviously all agreed. What you usually want is you want someone who's going to be many Bitcoiners, just disagreeable, and it's like, no, I don't agree. So then you have a hung jury, because it just takes one, and that person just needs to be strong enough to hold out. So that's what kind of you're looking for, is people who are maybe more neutral, or seem like they would want the prosecution to have a lot of evidence, like not beyond a shadow of a doubt. That's not the standard, but it needs to be like kind of pretty overwhelming, and just hold the prosecution to that standard, so that they don't kind of acquiesce and it's like, okay, well, I don't think he's guilty, but I want to go home, and maybe they're right. And people whose minds are easily changed, that's the problem with jury of 12, is usually you have some people who are very strong one way or the other, and they move everybody else.
Shout outs to Winston, what's up, Mitty, Allison, the other Jordan, Jay, what's up, Jay? I haven't seen you in a long time, bro.
Gabe, what were you saying?
Hey, yeah, I was just going to throw in another thought that I had about the legal concepts that we're talking about is, I think that, I mean, really at this point, we have to ask ourselves how much people have in the actual system as is nothing more than a carnival. The past and is, they call it lawfare, reason for it, but being used as a political weapon, regardless of whether or not, yes, he should be tried for these crimes and so forth and so on, the convenience of timing that with which these are being, I mean, it obviously begs the question, and not the fact that the state or the federal or whomever is seeking justice for the sake of justice. I mean, that's obvious. I mean, clearly these are, by and large, as far as these are of course, we do need to live in it. But when it's just so blatantly obvious, the motivation behind these types of things, it's kind of hard to find it. And it's really an example of the degradation in system law, that are meant to withhold the foundations of our society and keep us as a civilized group of individuals and not a bunch of savages. But it's a joke that so many people are now beginning to see that it's a joke. And I mean, let's think about what the reaction was to that massive list of convictions that now make one of the leading presidential candidates a convicted felon. I mean, let's ask ourselves, the day after that, who really cares? Does anybody care? Does it do anything besides give talking points and ammunition to opponents? But anyway, I don't want to get into the politics side of things. If you know me, you know my stance on these. But ideally, I really just wanted to illustrate an example of the degradation of trust that people are having in these systems, and the need for people to be awakened to the truth And not to be blinded by the story that's being perpetrated, because really what it does and what it is it's another method for them to keep us distracted from the true freedoms that are being taken away from us, which is something that I believe each of us should be highly focused on. And then I'm going to stop for now.
No, those are really, really good points. And one part about that that I think people tend to forget is that these things happen cyclically in societies where you have start to have corruption in the government, especially when you have fiat, because it actually incentivizes all kinds of perverse behaviors in humans. And so what do? It's like you said, Gabe, you want to have law and order, or you would like to live in law and order, because without law and order, basically, you know, what are the reasons that laws exist in the first place? Why do countries exist in the first place? Why is there such a thing as the state? The state is just the extension of us. The state is supposed to be an endorsed, approved of by the people, centralized force that will basically go out and make sure people aren't doing really bad things to other people. And why do humans kind of keep coming back to that? It's because most humans, as I was saying before, a lot of them are frightened people. A lot of them don't know how to basically physically defend themselves, so they rely upon others. And the problem with that is that when it's great when the others are just and moral and ethical, but when the others, whether that be the government or the legal system, by the way, I heard an attorney tell me it was a legal system, not a justice system. It's not designed for justice. It's designed to follow procedures. When the legal system or the government or even law enforcement becomes corrupt, and those other people that you entrust with the sacred duty of protecting each other from bad people, when they become the bad people, that's when cycles of humanity basically erupt. And that's when the warriors in the garden put down the garden tools and pick up the other tools, if you understand what I'm saying. And those are the last people that want to do it. They don't want to do it for two reasons. Number one, because if they're professional warriors, then they've seen bad stuff and they don't want more bad stuff. Nobody who's been to war likes it, generally speaking. There's some that, like, you know, get addicted to some of the tempo and some of the operations and some of the camaraderie and some of the just, you know, doing stuff. But I don't think that veterans actually, generally speaking, like war or even want war. That's a misconception by a lot of people. They're the last ones that want it. And it's like, if you force those guys to put down the garden tools, man, look the fuck out, because that's basically they're committing suicide. They're putting their old life away. They know they will never see their old life again. And like, when you take away all the old life things and all the guys got left is like, you forced me into a corner. Look the fuck out. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, good points. Just want to just let everyone know, it looks like Pavel Durov has been released from French custody.
Apparently the French police must listen to Bitcoin Veterans in the Mornings, because he was released while we were on this space talking about
boom. It. See, there you go. You're welcome.
It's a trend. Simply Bitcoin. Now, Pavel, we're reaching it. Don't underestimate us. I want to thank our sponsors who help us with this show. First off, I want to thank Silent, SLNT, they're Faraday bags. So just make sure, if you have your, you know, your hardware wallet or anything like that, you want to protect from EMP, solar flares, reach out to them, silent.com, /BitcoinVets, BTC vets, to save 15% and also get free shipping on qualified orders. Solo Satoshi, solo Bitcoin miners, make sure that the mining network's decentralized, solosatoshi.com. Punchplate, make sure that you store your hardware keys, not on paper, as if something happens, a flood, a fire, a storm, you're going to lose those. Make sure you punch them on plate. Go to coddle.co for Punchplate. And last but not least, Black Sheep Ammo. They were one of the, they graciously donated 6,000 rounds to the, our range day at Bitcoin conference. Check them out, blacksheepammo.com. Mickey, it looks like you got your hand up. So with Jason, same with Jason.
No, I don't have a hand up, but I guess if I'm talking, just shout out to Tom Tabor. He's a cool dude. I see him there.
Yeah, and I had my hand up earlier, but had dropped it down. The conversation moved on, but thank you.
I want to, can you all hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
All right, sorry, looks like I'm having some issues. I want to apologize to Lisa Huff for getting her name wrong. I'm very sorry about that, Lisa.
Game Lord, open mic.
Hey, Tom. Taylor, welcome to the stage. How you doing?
Thank you. Appreciate it. This is my first time listening live, but I've been listening to all the recordings, and it's just awesome that you guys are doing this. Some of my favorite people on here, for sure.
Thanks, brother. Likewise. Lots of love.
Thanks. One of the things I was thinking about was Mickey was talking about rich billionaires not wanting to go to France anymore. It's the game theory playing out of what jurisdictions are going to be the most amenable to Bitcoiners and which ones are going to rise to the top. And El Salvador is definitely a good candidate. And how does that all play out? That's always an interesting idea to me is how, what are the safest places for Bitcoiners to go and how far are those nation states going to be willing to protect Bitcoiners against authoritarianism as well? So that's all.
What a cool combo today. It's been, and just so you guys know, moving forward into the future, the next couple of days, Coleman is going to be acting as the main host. I'll be acting basically as a co-host. And starting next week, Coleman's taking over as the main host. So awesome stuff. I'm very excited for this and think he's going to do a great job.
Thank you. Yeah, I look forward to the opportunity.
Some people might be wondering, like, oh, why isn't Alex going to host main host? Guys, I did it for 2 years, okay? And, you know, I had a lot of people asking me, you know, when there was nothing going on at the 10 a.m. slot, I had a lot of people asking, hey, you know, you should spin up a Spaces. And I was like, yeah, probably should, but just being real, I don't want to. However, we figured out a way we could do it. You know, we spin it up and then, you know, we let the other guys carry the torch. And it will be a place where Bitcoiners can come and talk every morning and learn about Bitcoin. And that's a good thing.
So you got about 5 minutes left. We'll start wrapping everything up. Anybody have any closing comments or anything they want to talk about? See a couple hands up.
That's weird. I don't see any hands up.
Yeah, I don't see any hands up either. I'll just jump in. Go ahead, Alex.
I was just going to say, I think your interface is really messed up, Coleman. But yeah, please continue, Terrence.
Yeah, his mic is like literally the opposite. I was just going to say, I just was noticing that it looks like Hal Finney, this is the 10-year anniversary of when he passed away. You know, he had ALS, and he's an icon, obviously, in the Bitcoin community. For newcomers that don't know, he received the very first email from Satoshi Nakamoto, and he also received the very first transaction of 10 Bitcoin. And something that I find kind of interesting and fun to think about is that, you know, when he passed, when he died, he froze his head. And, you know, with the way we store seed words and remember our keys, I like to imagine what if Hal Finney died with his Bitcoin keys, and when technology advances and he's able to plop his head onto a living body, does he just spin up his Bitcoin again?
Wait a minute. You're telling me that Hal Finney froze his head? Is that real, or is that, are you serious?
No, that's true. Right? It's frozen in Northern California. He absolutely did that.
Wow. Okay.
But anyway, so 10-year anniversary of his passing, and obviously we owe a lot of gratitude to him for what Bitcoin has become.
Other Terrence, do you got something?
Sure. Check out Noster. I've been there for the first time actively in a long time. In light of the Telegram CEO rest, Noster has unfettered free speech. And the reason I know that is because I said, so do people here just self-censor? Can the relay admins kind of suppress your speech, or just people say whatever they want? And they're like, here's a recipe for you. And I'm not going to say what the recipe was, but it was something that would be censored on any other social media platform. So I think for those of you who are interested in supporting free speech or just not having your own speech censored, check out Nostr, please.
Heck yeah. By the way, if any of you out there, a shameless plug or a shameless follow me request, if you're look at my profile, my NPub is on there. Woohoo, let's go.
How's it going, everyone? San Antonio Bitcoin Club founder G here. Military city down here. Love what y'all are doing. My mentor is a former vet himself, so I have the utmost respect for this whole community, and thank y'all for everything.
Thanks, brother. Very cool. Thank you for coming up.
All right. Well, I think that's going to be a wrap, everybody. Thank you so much. Make sure you catch us on the Bitcoin Veterans video podcast. It happens every week. I did one last night, and I just so happened to be featured on it. It was a great show. Talked a lot about hunting and fishing. So make sure you give that a listen. It was a lot of fun. I want to thank you, everybody, for the speakers who joined up here. Producer Jacob, thank you very much for helping out on this. And make sure you help us with this mission. You know, we talked about it a lot today, tyranny or freedom. I think the choice is pretty clear. Thank you to our partners, everyone who's helping us get everything across. And Alex, do you have anything else you want to say?
Yeah, I just want to double thank the speakers again, because these people take their time out of their own schedules without compensation to basically share the good word of Bitcoin. And I think that that is a very admirable thing for them to do. So we love you guys. Appreciate you guys for that. Also, I guess we'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you all for being here. Have a great day, guys. Crush it.